This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. Our guest today on the Radio Cafe is Tim Jennison. Tim's Vermeer, the documentary about an amazing project that he took on to discover and reproduce the painting technique of Johannes Vermeer, is screening tonight at 6 o'clock at the Jean Cocteau Cinema in Santa Fe. It's a benefit for the Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico, and Tim Jennison will be there. Welcome, Tim, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks a lot.
So tell us the story of how you got interested in the techniques, not only the painting techniques, but really kind of like the optical techniques surrounding the paintings, maybe, of the great painter Johannes Vermeer.
Well, I'm a computer graphics guy at my day job. I design television production equipment and 3D animation software, things like that. And I'm used to looking at images in a kind of a technical way. You know, I can look at a TV set and tell you that that camera is adjusted wrong, or and I'm sort of tuned into that technical side of imaging. Well, my daughter bought me a book by David Hockney for Christmas. I think it was in 2001, maybe 2002, I think. And David Hockney's book, Secret Knowledge, famous British artist David Hockney, he wrote this book, and it was very controversial. He said that somewhere in the late Renaissance, artists must have been suddenly using optics much more, and it gave their paintings far more realism. Well, the art world didn't want to hear this. They thought that that would be cheating and it was just sort of unseemly, and they accused Hockney of trying to tear down these artistic geniuses. Well, I found the whole thing fascinating, and I went through his book looking at the pictures, trying to see what he was saying. And then in the footnotes of the book, he mentioned an earlier book called Vermeer's Camera by Philip Stedman. So I got that book, and that was very interesting. And Stedman looked specifically at Johannes Vermeer, the Dutch artist, who painted in the mid-1600s. And Stedman, he's an architect. He's a professor of architecture, and he analyzed the paintings and discovered that there's mathematical evidence in the perspective of the pictures that a camera was used, almost proved it. So I started looking at these pictures, and I go, wait, there's something else going on here. This is not just good perspective. This is perfect color. And I know from my experience with television imagery that our eye is not sensitive to some of the things I was seeing, very subtle gradients and very accurate brightness, that I thought it must have been done mechanically. And I either invented or rediscovered a very simple way to do it involving just a flat mirror, but a mirror used in a very different way. And that sent me down the road, down the rabbit hole, and I just kind of became an obsession at some point.
Yeah, I mean, you actually decided to build a reproduction of one of the rooms in a Vermeer painting, The Music Lesson, and then try to paint it and make a documentary of the whole process as you were going along, probably not quite knowing what you were getting yourself into.
No, nobody knew what was going to happen. Now, it wasn't my idea to make a film about it. It was my friend Penn Jillette of the magician team, Penn and Teller. I was sort of doing early experiments on this, and they were working extremely well. And Penn called me up from Vegas, and he said, hey, come to Vegas and talk to me. I need an adult conversation right now. He'd been hanging out with his toddlers and not with his friends. So he wanted me to come out and talk. And we sat down for dinner. And he said, so talk to me about anything but show business or politics. I've had it up to here with show business and politics this week. And I said, well, what do you know about Vermeer? And he said, the Dutch painter. And I said, yeah. Well, I know the first page of Wikipedia, I suppose. I went to one of his shows. It's fantastic realist art. And I said, well, I think I figured out how Vermeer did it with a basically a simple machine. And he said, what? And so I explained it to him, and I showed him a little video on my camcorder, looking through the apparatus. And he said, I totally get how this works. It's very similar to one of the principles that we use in magic called mirror masking. Mm-hmm. And he said, what are you going to do with this? And I said, well, I'm going to try to build a full-size room that looks like one of Vermeer's paintings, and I'm going to set up the machine. I'm going to, even though I've never made an oil painting, I'm not a painter, I'm going to try to repaint a different Vermeer. And he said, well, okay, well, then what are you going to do with that? And I said, well, I'm going to, you know, if it works, I'll write a paper or I don't know. And he said, no, that's stupid. This should be a movie. Let's go to L.A. tomorrow and pitch this. And that's what happened. And one thing led to another and just snowballed. But yeah, you're right. We didn't know what was going to happen. We did not know if the experiment would work. And because Penn had all these cameras basically wall-to-wall, 24/7, you, the audience, see everything happen. It's not like a lot of documentaries where they sort of reconstruct things.
Were there cinematographers on scene, or was it all just sort of like rolling?
Both. For some things like interviews and some of the location shoots in Holland or England, we hired a local crew, or rather Penn did, and for the painting, where I'm sitting there hour after hour painting, getting very frustrated, that was just locked off cameras, and I would turn them on, you know, when I came in, and then turn them off when I left. And so it's a combination of those two.
What I thought was so fascinating is the separation of the way the eye sees and the way a camera sees. And you were starting to talk about that. And there are things with color and perspective and line that when you look at those paintings, and I was an art history major back in the day, and I saw Vermeer paintings in person and in reproduction many times, and was always struck by how insanely realistic they were, even compared to other very realistic paintings of that time, but never really thought that maybe there were actual optics going on. Can you explain that to us a little more?
Well, a lot of people in art history now accept that Vermeer probably used what's called a camera obscura. And it's a very simple device, and it's the basis of all modern cameras. It's a lens and a sort of a little black box behind the lens. And it forms a little projection at the back of the box. And that's true of even your smartphone camera. There's a lens and there's a tiny little black box. Well, Latin for black room is camera obscura. So this has been known since antiquity. The ancient Chinese and Egyptians knew about the principle. It's kind of like you set up a lens in a dark room and you get a projection on the opposite wall. And it's kind of like a very dim video projector. I mean, you see people moving around outside, but it's very dim, and it's hard to see. So you can trace things in a camera obscura, and you will get very accurate perspective. You can trace lines. But if you try to copy colors, it doesn't work. First of all, it's so dim inside the booth that you can't really make out the colors. We lose sensitivity. In moonlight, everything looks sort of washed out, black and white. So then the second problem is, let's say that there's an apple in the middle of your projection. There's an apple outside the camera. You're inside the camera. You see the apple. It's upside down and backward and very dim. So here's this red apple. You pick up some red paint on your brush, and you apply it to the apple, and now the apple gets much darker and much redder because now you've got red paint on there that is illuminated by red light from the lens. You cannot tell what color you just painted.
Right.
So you have to turn on the lights. Well, now you can't see your projection. So there's no way to compare the color from the projected image to your paint. And that's what I came up with. And it's just a simple mirror at a 45-degree angle. And you look along the edge of the mirror. And in reflected in the mirror, you see the camera obscura image. And off the edge of the mirror, you see your canvas. And right at the edge of the mirror, you can compare to see if the colors match. And that's the basis of the whole thing. And it's extremely simple. And you don't have to have the lens in the dark room. You can do this with nothing but a flat mirror and some object you want to paint. You just line it up so you can see your object reflected in the mirror. You have to have the mirror in just the right spot for this to work. And that's maybe why nobody has really rediscovered this. So I started, the Vermeer experiment worked extremely well, and not being a painter, I painted something that strongly resembles a Vermeer. I mean, the brushwork is terrible. The closer you get, the more, you know, it's a joke compared to Vermeer's brushwork, which is sublime. But I started looking for other artists that might have known the trick and how they might have learned it and how they might have used it, and so the obsession goes on. I'm still down the rabbit hole.
Are you? That's what I was wondering, because, I mean, there were times during the documentary where you are, I mean, it's backbreaking work. As you said, it is not a time saver. I mean, it is
no.
A way to achieve realism, but I've sort of wondered whether you would ever touch a paintbrush again after it was over.
I didn't for a long time. I didn't pick up a brush for close to 2 years, 3 years, almost 3 years. And then I go, okay, I got to try another thing. And I painted Girl with the Pearl Earring.
Did you really?
One of Vermeer's most iconic pictures. And it's my daughter, Claire. So I call it Claire with the Pearl Earring.
Mm-hmm.
And Claire had her head literally in a wooden clamp for several hours each day for 5 days. And this is an extremely simple setup. It's just a flat mirror on a stick, and I can see Claire reflected in the mirror. And we're in the Vermeer room, so there's light streaming in from two windows. And the painting came out, it's a different girl, but it really looks like that's how he painted this picture. So now I'm on to Caravaggio, the Italian painter, painted 60, 70 years before Vermeer, and extremely influential in the art world. Vermeer was not a big influence in painters. After him, but Caravaggio was. Caravaggio set the art world on his ear with what they call chiaroscuro, this very contrasty and very accurate facial modeling in his pictures. And so I am now repainting one of Caravaggio's pictures, and it's working extremely well. Caravaggio is a strange story. He was a crazy man. He was usually drunk. He wouldn't let anybody watch him paint, generally speaking. He painted his friends only. They said he couldn't paint without a model in front of him. He owned a lot of mirrors. He would hang out at a mirror maker shop. And all of his paintings are basically life size. And if you use the mirror in this fashion, you have to paint at life size. In other words, if a face is 7 inches tall from chin to top of head, it's going to be about that size on the canvas if you use the mirror in this way. So a lot of circumstantial evidence, but Penn told me keep the cameras running in case something interesting happens. So, you might see this on YouTube or, I don't know, hard to say what will happen, but
right.
is working.
One of the things that I was really wondering about was also in the Tim's Vermeer, you do use your daughter as a model for the girl in the music lesson, and you have a male model as well. There's two characters in the original painting. And you also do that thing where you keep her head steady with a device and so on. Do you think Vermeer did that, or do you think he painted a lot faster?
Maybe both. In the Caravaggio experiments we're doing now, my friend Graham, who appears as the gentleman in my painting, The Music Lesson, Graham is a painter. He's a great painter, but he doesn't paint in a realistic style. He's more sort of fantastical. dragons and devils and, you know, bizarre creatures and a very distinctive style. But I am asking him to try to paint with the mirror, and he grits his teeth and does it. It's not enjoyable. Nobody that's tried this that can actually paint, they don't enjoy it. They say it takes the joy out of painting. But you get this incredible, incredible result. So we've tried it with and without head clamps. And Graham can do pretty well with the model unclamped. You know, they move around a little bit. You can't help it. But Graham can kind of compensate for it and paint in the comparator mirror. It is better, though, if you're resting, at least resting your chin on something. Myself, I pretty much have to have the head immobilized. But, you know, like I say, it took me 5 days of a couple hours a day to paint Claire's face. Since then, I've working on this Caravaggio, I've painted a face in half an hour or so and got it pretty, you know, got a really good start in half an hour. So as I'm learning to paint, I'm seeing that, yeah, you can work pretty fast. And so, you know, Claire, at the end of the 5 days, was ready to kill me. she, at one point, I have this on video. She says, "Never ask me to do this again." And then she would go out in the parking lot and lay down, face down, to stretch her back. And, you know, she called me a week later after she went back to the East Coast, and she said, "I'm sorry, I was being a jerk. It's a cool painting, so sorry."
Well, it's such an interesting experiment because, I mean, when you look at even reproductions of the very few paintings of Vermeer that have survived, they look photographic not only in their perspective and in their color and in that sort of crazy realism of the spatial piece of it, but also the faces. I mean, they look like snapshots. They look like he really caught the action of somebody's gesture and somebody's face, you know? And that's what's so striking. And one wonders if the mirror thing, I don't know, what's your thought about that?
Well, if you think back on the Vermeers, a lot of them are very placid. People are in a relaxed pose. You know, they're reading a letter or they're sitting at a table.
Well, like that lady pouring the milk jug.
That one is action, yes. And, you know, there are things that will be moving as he's painting them, like clouds. You know, sometimes there are clouds in the picture, and you can't use this technique to make a snapshot of clouds. But it does help you paint clouds. We experimented with that. But, yeah, I mean, there is this verisimilitude in Vermeer, and it you notice it when you see a Vermeer hanging in a gallery with other art, Dutch art. It really is an outlier. There's a couple other Dutch artists, handful of Dutch artists that seem to get a similar result. And I'm thinking of still life painters like Peter Klaus, Willem Klaus Heda, and Willem Kalf, who painted these breakfast pictures of food on a table, and they look just like a Kodachrome.
Yeah.
They may have known the trick. You know, there are connections between these people. And it does jump right out at you. And my friend Carl says, I can always, if I look at a Vermeer on the wall and I stand back 10 or 20 feet and I squint, the picture looks 3D. And, you know, it's just that everything is right about it. All the colors are at their proper intensities and brightness, and it just sells. It, like you say, it does look like a photograph.
Well, and the other thing that I wondered, you set up that scene, the music room, and you presumably set up lights to reproduce the angle of light that was coming in, but Vermeer was probably painting with the angle of the light at whatever time of day it was, and of course that is continually changing.
Yes, yes. So to be as authentic as possible, I used optics from the time. In other words, I had to make my own lens in the fashion that they made lenses at that time. I did not use any artificial light. It was daylight coming through the window. I was very careful to have, I rented a building that is facing the same compass heading as Premier's studio. So the light is the same. It's north-northwest. And, you know, I used authentic pigments that Premier used in the paint. I made my own paint. So wherever I thought it might affect the result, I used ancient materials and techniques. So a lot of people ask me, what about the changing light? You know, you're painting along and then suddenly something changes. Now you, what, you start over? Or you paint exactly at 3:30 every afternoon? Or how do you do that? Well, I knew just from doing the thought experiment before I started, I knew this would not be a problem. The reason it's not a problem is, I'll explain. If I'm painting, let's say it's 3 in the afternoon, and there's a partly cloudy sky that we often get here in San Antonio, and they often get in Delft-Holland, and these little puffy white clouds are marching across the sky, and all of a sudden the lighting in my room changes. It goes from maybe a bluish bright light, in other words, sunlight with a blue sky. Now a cloud goes over the sun, and now it gets a little redder and darker. And I can actually see, you know, if I look up, I see the room changing. And it's dramatically different light. But remember, I'm looking at the comparator mirror, and the comparator mirror is comparing the color out in the room to the color on my canvas. The canvas is lit from the same sky, so the canvas also gets darker and redder, just right along with the room, by the same amount. And at the edge of the comparator mirror, I can't tell anything has happened. I continue to paint. Within reason, it's like having automatic brightness control. Now, the sun can affect you. I mean, depending on the clouds outside the window, it can cast sort of, make certain things in the room change unequally. So, but if you have an overcast sky, that's kind of the best case scenario. It's extremely consistent. But I didn't find the lighting to be a problem at all. It's just it's not a factor.
We're talking to Tim Jennison about the movie Tim's Vermeer. And the result of all of this is so interesting, to have the two paintings side by side, a reproduction of Vermeer's The Music Room and then your painting. By some people's estimation, you proved the concept. The paintings are amazingly similar. Others have called it a paint-by-numbers result, and you said, you know, your brushwork is not, I mean, you're not a painter, and so that's not what it's about. But what was your own feeling about what you'd created when it was all done? Do you think you proved the concept?
No, there are other explanations, and without a smoking gun, real hard evidence, you can't prove it. And, you know, what the world has thought up to this point is that Vermeer did this with skill. And people were very skilled in those days. They would study with a master apprentice from childhood. You know, it's kind of like starting the Suzuki violin at age 4. You know, you have to start early to get good. Well, they did. And it's possible that he could have got some of those tones correct without the comparator mirror. If he really wanted to, he could have used other techniques to get those colors and brightnesses right. It's a lot more work. So, no, I haven't proved it. If there was a letter that Johannes Vermeer wrote to a friend that said, oh, I set up the mirror the other day and painted another picture and 45 degrees and I matched the colors, you know, that's what it would take to prove it. But I think it's circumstantial evidence. And I think there's more to go. I mean, my picture is different in certain ways from Vermeer's. And I wasn't trying to copy his painting. I was trying to paint his room.
Yeah.
I built the room based on his painting. But so there are differences, and they're interesting. My rule was copy everything you see in the mirror as literally as possible. And then we'll compare it to the Vermeer. So one of the big differences is the Turkish carpet in the lower right corner. I painted every stitch on that thing. It took me about 35% of the total painting time to paint that rug because I got so detailed. Vermeer was much more economical and just painted sort of the suggestion of the cloth texture, and obviously much better and much faster than I did. But Vermeer painted very slowly. That's one of the clues. He would paint a picture on average every 6 months. It took me 7 months to make that picture.
Right.
But, you know, no proof to be had, but there's more and more circumstantial evidence that I'm coming up with. Of course, I have what they call confirmation bias. I tend to see things that support my idea, my hypothesis, and maybe dismiss things that don't, but everybody does that. You can't avoid it. So it's nice to have a lively debate, and you know, art people are now starting to make arguments one way or the other over this.
Well, that's what's so interesting is the art historical conversation and the kind of almost knee-jerk rejection of the idea that people were using tricks or help or something like that, because I think people are so wedded to this idea of the, as you put it in the film, unfathomable genius, and don't like the idea that maybe it's a fathomable genius.
Right. I mean, this is what everybody knows about Vermeer. I mean, I'm the nut in the room, you know, I'm the one saying, no, everybody else is wrong, I'm right. But that's what everybody's taught, and, you know, people who've studied art history like yourself, you know, maybe somebody mentioned optics in connection with Dutch art, but, you know, it's all meant to be just great skill.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up, but I'm making the arguments. There are people starting to write academic papers. There's a big exhibit going up in an art museum in Australia next month, or in July 2nd, it goes up at the Museum of Old and New Art, and they're running a series of experiments based on my comparator mirror. And they've hired 11 different painters to come in and use the machinery and try different techniques, different paintings, different artists. And that will run for maybe 6 months to a year there in Tasmania. And so things are happening.
Has your painting ever been exhibited?
Well, it will be in Tasmania. Uh-huh. And, you know, occasionally I have taken the painting on the road to do a movie screening or here and there, and it will be at in Mason City, Iowa, at the end of June. They're having a 50th anniversary at the McNider Art Museum, and the painting will be there, and I'll be there to talk about it.
And you will be in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tonight at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
The Jean Cocteau Cinema. Tim Jennison, the film is called Tim's Vermeer, and it's a benefit for the Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You're welcome. Thanks for your interest.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.